is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, good afternoon. It's the Disaster Recovery Hour. As Dave says, it's WVNJ, 1160 AM, The Voice, every Tuesday between 1 and 2. And it is like a fall day or a spring day out there. Not much bad weather. We're, you know, some snow came in for a little bit, but nothing crazy so far for the winter. Which is a good thing. That's for people who are experiencing less damage than usual. Excuse me. But there's still plenty of information regarding Irene out there. It's in the papers, the locals up in Westchester, say here in Jersey, also on the island, you know, combating the constant flooding from these storms. I'll tell you, you know, if with the snow and if it froze and then we had the rain right after that, like we did last year, you know, that causes all this flooding issues too. So it's still in the news, and like I like to bring it up every time on the show just to keep it fresh. Because Jersey's got some plans that have been in place since 1986 from the Corps of Engineers, starting up in Rockland and Westchester, and that the Ramapo rolls into Jersey. And I got plenty of work from Irene this past with the hurricane because of the releasing of water and flooding and so on and so forth. So that's that's still a very touchy situation because the. They're trying to do numerous things to alleviate that, and including buying out properties, and you know what's the in this down economy, you know what are the housing, what's the housing worth, and you know so people are, a lot of people are upside down mortgage wise, and what's the property worth, so it's a catch 22, you know, trying to solve the issues and to buy properties, but yet not have the we have a walk in guest, I guess, but anyway. So that's one of the things I just wanted to bring up. Listen, and the article that was in this past week and change ago, it's in the Record. There's a link to it. Also, there's another link to an article regarding generators, which was a pretty informative generator article. And you know, my past guest Dan O'Brien from Academy Electric and Electrical Power Systems, he was quoted in there along with several other Jersey and New York contractors. But the way of the generator is a very hot topic, and hopefully Dan is super busy, and hopefully I can have him in a couple of weeks, so we can talk about that topic. It's just not going to Home Depot and putting some gas in. It's a lot more involved, and it's complicated, needless to say. And there's inspections and zonings and things like that. So a lot to go into it. But there is there's a high demand. Most of the guys are busy from here all the way out to the Montauk. Guys are flooded with calls and quotes and things like that. You know, I'm talking about preparedness. That's all about preparedness. So it's. You know, we're rolling. We got another unfortunate situation, Marist College, with three college students that perished in a fire a couple days ago. That is can't fathom it. With child loss, and you know, I just want to you know, say for our show and the people that are involved in the show, including myself, obviously, hearts go out and prayers go out to the families. That's you know, it's supposed to be a good time of your life going to college. So that's one of the things I think some things will be looked at regarding the way the fire was. I don't have the intel, and I wouldn't, even if I did, I wouldn't say it. However, things need to probably be reviewed in housing. There was a lot of pluses that came out of the Seton Hall fire years ago. Unfortunately, you know, people perished, but and lots of injuries. And continuing nightmares for those people involved, but you know, things are looked at. So I'm not saying anything good, but hopefully, you know, what some of the new laws and codes that they have in place now are saving lives. So, and then we got in the middle of the winter, we got tornadoes down south. That came out of nowhere. So you know, the weather's whacked out. And so preparedness is a hot topic, and that's why the show is doing well, if you will. Lots of guests. It's not some little industry anymore. Emergency management and there's degrees out there for emergency management. We've talked about it with Ari from Adelphi with emergency management degrees, and also volunteerism with the CERTs with Shelly Johnson. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So we got to do one thing. It's not a disaster. It's a good thing. We got to say congratulations to the Giants and all Giant fans, including myself, including most people here at the station. So that's a good thing. Beating San Francisco reminded me of the old days. I just can't believe it's 21 years already after the first time they beat him with that late field goal. I don't know. We're going to go to. We're not going to go to a break. Dave's not even in the booth, but that's okay. What else? But we were going to say something about the tornadoes, and I did. We got several items, but my upcoming guest today is a director over there, Noah's Wish, and it's about saving animals in times of disaster, whether they're man-made or like downtown, naturally a human, man-made or natural. So let's go to work. We'll go to a quick one and pick up our guest, and we'll rock and roll from there.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
Victor Ray, this is Scorpion 23, traveling west on MSR Vernon for Victor. 16 packs, request MSR status, over. Roger, Scorpion 23, all MSRs and AOR red past 24 hours, 3 IEDs on MSR Vernon.
In war, there will always be casualties. And for our wounded warriors, coming home can sometimes be a battle in itself. American troops who suffer traumatic injuries need the support of every American. Join us and send your message of support to our wounded warriors and their families at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
Hey, welcome back. Get the earphones on, I can't hear myself. Disaster Recovery Hour, every Tuesday, WVNJ 1160, The Voice, between 1 and 2. Listen, I know you know it, but I'm going to tell you anyway, drhradio.net. That is drhradio.net. That is the website. And comments, just type your little fingers away. There's always an opportunity to give a question to the guest, and also past guests. And there's been several times where questions have been given to the comments page after, with people signing up for the podcast, which you can sign up for the podcast. Like I said, just go to drhradio.net and just put in your email, and you'll get the show, and you can listen to it at your leisure. Also, we do have the rerun of the, I think that's the right thing, is it rerun or tape or whatever, but on Saturdays at noon, if you missed the show. One thing I did not do in the first part, I did not say thanks to Charlie Iannetti, who's retired PD out of Alpine. We were talking last week about home safety, which is still, nothing's changed in 1 week. There was 15 businesses broken into here in North Jersey. I heard some things from my buddies out there, Service Master guys, doing some break-in cleanups. Vinny and Kevin from PDS, the Service Master of PDS out there in Ronkonkoma, they've been doing some work regarding these burglaries. It's an unfortunate thing, but I hope the show was enlightening about, and Charlie's going to return. We're going to talk about home alarm systems, but also about reviewing your insurance policy, because it's insurance driven. You know, people break in. That's what we call a loss. So there's things that you should be looking at with your valuables, and or you just your regular ordinary furniture and windows and doors and things like that. All those types of things you should be talking with your agent or your broker about. It's very important. There's very few things that happen that are not somehow going to be touched by insurance, and that's where my world is. I'm in the insurance business of the restoration end of damages, man-made or natural. But I hope it was informative, and like I said, Charlie's going to return probably next month, getting a little recap on some of our topics that we talked about last week. God, I can't get rid of this little cough I got going on. However, we're moving into my guest today is something that not enough people are aware of. Americans have a lot of domesticated animals, so, dogs, cats, and fish, and birds, and there's the exotic shows on A&E with the exotic pets and things like that. But all comes into, they're part of your family. Let's call it what it is. It's a big industry, and I'd be looking, I think maybe next year, getting a dog, because the kids are able to, they're a little more mature now. Otherwise, I was going to be babysitting, and I'm a little too busy to be babysitting a puppy. But today's guest is in the field of rescuing dogs from disasters, whether they're man-made, like downtown, or the tornadoes or the hurricanes. And she's got a long history of volunteering, and also she's been a licensed veterinary technician for over 20 years. Today's guest is Joellen Cimino. Joellen, you there?
I'm here, Chris.
Hey, how you making out?
I'm doing fine.
Good. You have an extensive background, all obviously animal driven. You're a graduate of SUNY, applied animal science, past president of the New York State Association of Veterinary Technicians. You've worked with the Small Animal Veterinary Medicine in Brewster. You're still there, I think, right? You're still there?
I'm not. I actually left there after 20 years to take my professional skills on the road to helping people and their pets recover after disasters. So, it's great to be able to do that.
People listening, obviously, drhradio.net. They'll go to the website, because we have Joellen's bio on there, and also we have a photo of her in the field. I think what you said, some donkeys.
donkey and a horse. That was last year's one of the tornado recovery efforts that happened down in Georgia.
Yeah. So now you're the director of animal health and services and education for Noah's Wish. So why don't we start off? Let's start off with Noah's Wish. Give me the BG on that. Give me the background on that.
Noah's Wish is basically, I think most people are familiar with what the Red Cross offers disaster victims in a disaster response situation. Noah's Wish provides similar services for animals in disasters. So when people are displaced and they cannot take their pets with them into a sheltering situation, we come behind them and set up a temporary disaster shelter where we actually provide, you know, food, water, medical services, sometimes recovery services, sometimes short-term fostering services for people that are displaced because of a disaster that has happened.
Now, Noah's Wish has been in existence for 10 years now, is it?
Correct. This is our 10th anniversary year. We're very excited about that. And, you know, we've got a pretty extensive list of responses that we've done in that short period of time. And, you know, watching from last year that there was no end to the amounts of disasters that were, you know, hitting the front pages every day.
Yeah, and it's funny because, not funny, but one of the things, not one of the things, the main thing that we talk about is preparedness. But you know, when a family is sitting down at a table and they're saying, okay, let's do a drill here. Do we have the flashlights? Do we have the prescriptions? Do we have keys, extra cash, things that are in the proverbial toolkit, the things that we talk about in this program. The family pet, which is really a family member, sometimes gets overlooked. So it's a challenge. You know, what goes between your legs and you're petting them and you're writing down your list of the to-do list, it gets overlooked.
And that's true. And I think, you know, definitely on the national effort going on is that there is pieces that are put into place as far as making a disaster go kit for your pet, so pet go kit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of lists on how to do that, and this is a great way to incorporate, especially if you have children in the family, giving them some of the responsibility and giving them a little checklist so that they can put together the family, you know, the go kit for the pet. So everybody is aware, and they're also helping to prepare. So, you know, in the pet go kit is going to be like a week's worth of food, some toiletry items to keep that animal cleaned up, some way of actually restraining that pet. So if you go to a relative's house or you're going into a pet-friendly hotel, you know, how are you going to keep that animal contained? So do you have a collapsing crate for your dog,
mm-hmm, right,
or a tie-out, you know, leash, or, you know, cat carrier or cat crate, food and water bowls, a supply of medications if your pet is one that is on medication or prescription food, things like that. Definitely you want to have a copy of your pet's medical vaccine records.
Mm-hmm.
And a copy of a photograph of you and your pet, just to actually prove ownership. So a lot of our listeners have phones that have the ability to take a picture. So if you get a picture of you with your pet, you kind of are proving ownership. It's on your phone. It's your pet.
Yeah,
you're in the picture, and that's a great way. In case any way you are separated from your pet during a disaster and you're looking, even if we're talking day-to-day without a disaster, you know, for any of our pet owners that have lost their pets and they're like, oh, you know, if I had a picture of my pet to, you know, kind of do up and put up lost posters or go to the veterinary hospitals to post a poster or to animal control, these are all very quick and everyday useful things to have about you when you are you have a pet that you are responsible for.
Now, Noah's Wish is across the country.
Correct. We're a national organization, 501(c).
And so you're an NGO, and you teach at various colleges. Obviously, in our area, you do two annual up at Mercy College,
right,
in Dobbs Ferry.
Right.
But you know, was it springboarded from down from 9/11?
Actually, Noah's Wish came into existence after 2001. So we came into existence in 2002, and we were, you know, we understood this whole piece about preparedness and mitigation and recovery efforts, and
mm-hmm,
and didn't feel that it was not necessarily being addressed at an appropriate level. And sometimes, you know, people, there's a lot of great animal organizations out there doing some wonderful work for animal welfare pieces, but nobody was really focusing on just the specific disaster response piece. So it doesn't matter what the animal has been utilized. An animal that's in a disaster needs help regardless whether it's a puppy mill dog or, you know, livestock or anything. So we don't get caught up in the normal day-to-day animal welfare issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give an animal care regardless and not, you know, lecture people. That's not the time to be going through this piece. However, we are very, it doesn't matter who needs the services, they will receive services, but we also have to follow the ICS, the Incident Command System, and we can't just go in and deliver services. We actually have to be invited in. So there is a whole protocol. It doesn't matter on which side of the ICS structure you're on. There is a protocol on how you do respond in a disaster response setting.
So, let's go down that path. Now, everybody, we've had numerous guests from the OEMs of Long Island, here in Jersey, in the city, FDNY guys. You know, life and safety is their primary goal, and which is completely understandable. But now with the rescuing of pets or staging, now you're part of that incident command unit.
Correct. Where we actually fall into is mostly services, you know, again, being an NGO. So we're going to fall into a similar category as a lot of the church response groups providing services or the Red Cross providing services for people. But here ours expands into the animal arena. When we're talking about this, you know, this is the one of the things that Noah's Wish does provide is that we do training to train our volunteers on what it's like out on an actual disaster deployment to kind of prepare them physically and mentally of what it's like to be out on a disaster response. So when we do our trainings across the United States, it's a two-day disaster response in-field training, mm-hmm. and people actually live and learn what it's like to go through. So they're bringing their own food and water. They're sleeping on site with their own gear, so an air mattress, sleeping bag, whatever. And they're expected to, excuse the comment, rough it, so to speak.
Right.
And to actually participate in various activities. So it's not just a classroom. It's not done up in a hotel or a conference style type of situation. They're learning various techniques, anywhere from you know, emotional, psychological impact topics, compassion fatigue, grief and bereavement type of topics that, you know, they may be exposed to out there. This year is going to be critical incident stress is our disaster topic. How to do animal intake, so the process of when the animals are coming to the temporary shelter, how to go through that safely and appropriately so these animals can be reunited with their owners at the end of the disaster and the recovery project, and how to set up a temporary shelter. So it's not just, you know, going and putting together a couple of dog crates and throwing up a table, you know, at the mm-hmm. front to do some paperwork. There's a whole plan that goes into effect when we're actually doing a mobilization for a temporary shelter during a disaster.
Well, we're starting to get the comments page is starting to get fired up here, but let's continue a little bit further with the history of it. So your boots on the ground, as we like to say here on the program,
yep.
You have downtown as your experience in the hurricanes down in Florida, Katrina, obviously this past one with Irene. You've been to Haiti. We had a couple of shows on the Haiti earthquake, and one of the things that my good friends Little Paul and Big Paul, they were from MMRC of Haiti. They one of the things was the numerous animals. And because there was 300-some-odd thousand people that are dead.
Right.
And you talked about the psychological aspect
right.
of it, of seeing what you're seeing, is, you know, the training is, it must be, the psychological training, mm-hmm. is it 50-50, or is that the driving force? Because you can teach the X's and O's to your students, but psychologically, between the ears is a very bad neighborhood if you're not prepared to go into it.
And that's extremely true. I mean, it's not 50-50. It is a component of the training, and I think as people go on and they're actually going through the training, they've got a long day of training ahead of them, and by the end that nighttime rolls around, they're tired, and then they've slept in an unfamiliar place, just like a lot of the disaster evacuees have done, mm-hmm. and they're sleeping mess-style, you know, sleeping quarters, which means it's co-ed, and you're kind of all laid out there together in a mess sleeping room. But if you go to a Red Cross shelter during a disaster, they're experiencing that. So experiencing that, just tasting and scratching the surface of what it's like to actually have to go through that. At the end of that training weekend, they get to go home. Their home is there. Their family is there. Right. Their pets are there. And it's nothing really like what a disaster victim goes through or a survivor goes through. But it is giving a little more sense of reality. And, you know, after day three, we call it the bewitching day of a disaster response. People are kind of spent physically and emotionally as their adrenaline drops on day three. And even though they may be the most, you know, they may have a great sense of humor or, you know, be very calm in whatever they do in their day-to-day lives, that when they come out to a disaster, it's a very emotionally charged roller coaster that they're riding, and every hour is different. So you have your ups and your downs. Like you said, you're going to have some great things with reunions, with people coming to get their pets, and you have their pets. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to share, you know, some of the emotional piece where people are looking for their pets, or they're describing what they have gone through and witnessed firsthand. So you're kind of living a little bit vicariously through these disaster survivors. And, you know, it's important that our volunteers learn how to put some coping mechanisms into place and how to be there for the disaster survivors. Mm-hmm. They need us to support them and to be strong. You know, so it's an amazing piece to be able to witness and go out and help in this type of situation. Yeah.
Let's go to a break. We're going to pay some bills, but we have a lot to cover today. Stay with us, all right? DRHradio.net comments page.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP is the answer. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, our seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. To reach ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area. Are we really out here all alone? Find out on the UFO Show with Kate Valentine, Friday afternoons at 1 on WVNJ.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least 1 in 4 businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Mm-hmm.
There's the finger. Here we are back, Disaster Recovery Hour. A little past the bottom of the hour. My guest today is Joellen Cimino, and Joellen is the Director of Animal Health Services and Education for Noah's Wish, which is on our website as for a link, and that is drhradio.net. Also, Joe, I saw a little Facebook yesterday at facebook.com/drhradio. You can go to there, our fan our page, and check that out. Joe's got a comment in there. Joe, we have still plenty to cover. We might not even get it all done today because we got questions I need for you to answer. We got one from Laura. It said, how would you go about getting a dog or cat from your organization after a disaster? What happens with these misplaced pets?
Okay, so that's a great question. And what happens is... what we try to do is not necessarily put animals out that are displaced up for adoption unless the owner relinquishes the pet. So if after the disaster some people never come forth, we try to work with local authorities to put an appropriate plan into effect. So like during Arkansas, there was a three-month hold on every animal that was actually going through the shelter. So if people stepped forward to foster an animal, they had a three-month hold. If nobody came through in that three-month time period, they could permanently adopt that pet if wanted. Now, each location, again, it's directed by what local authorities have put in place as how long the holding time is. So it's, you know, definitely these animals have been through a lot going through the disaster, and they need really good forever disaster homes. But our key that we would rather and prefer for the welfare of the animal as well as, you know, the recovery for the family that has lost the pet is to give a foster option. So during a disaster, we may put out, you know, looking for appropriate foster homes, and usually we try to do it within a two-hour radius of that disaster response site, and then we'll take applications and do interviews about people. So, you know, it's not, we don't have, as Noah's Wish, a headquarters where we have tons of dogs and cats or whatever animals for adoption. That's not our piece. Our piece is strictly, you know, helping the recovery relief efforts in the post aftermath of a disaster.
Hopefully, Laura, that was a very in-depth explanation for that questions. Two questions, that is, and. Joe, I still want to talk about your past. Not like you're going to talk. I want to talk about your past, lady. But all that work experience. But like I said, the comments page is starting to light up. So another one is from Mara. It says we have a chip in our dog. I believe that would help many people. I would prove ownership and would also provide a vet with necessary medical attention that the pet needs. Well, is that a growing a way of taking care of the dog, or is it still in its infancy with the chips?
Chips definitely play a positive role in the disaster recovery efforts, and especially for the reunification of animals that are missing. And not every pet across the board has a microchip, and then it also, depending on the agency that is responding, requires for that agency to have what we call a universal scanner. There are three frequencies of microchips that are out on the market today, made by different manufacturers, and if you don't have the right scanner and you scan that animal may, you know, be thought not to have had a microchip when in fact they do. So it's important that, you know, whoever the responding agencies are actually using a true universal microchip scanner that reads all three frequencies. But I agree with Mara that definitely that is an excellent piece, and my dogs and cats are microchipped. You know, I want every chance possible that if my pet should get, you know, separated from me, that we can get them back home to us.
Yeah, that's, it's like a QR, the QR code. I'll give you an example. That's what I have for work. You know, people, I say, here, just take a picture of the QR. You get all the information that you need. It's accessible. You know, smartphones, the way things are going, I guess it's really just a matter of time before it's commonplace.
Right.
And we just have a comment, not so much a question. It's from Terry. It says, my heart goes out to these animals in a disaster. Great topic, which needs to be addressed. Do shelters have emergency plans to go into force when it is? So do you actually, guys, do you have Like you and I discussed this, but there is a shelter that you're hitting proverbial ground zero of a natural disaster or, unfortunately, man-made disaster. You're setting up camp right there.
Right, and I think if I'm reading this question, you know, directly, I don't know if it's you know, actually being tossed out towards animal shelters in general. Do they have an animal disaster plan so that in the event of a disaster, if they have to evacuate their shelter, where would these animals go, and who's going to be responsible for getting them there and taking care of them?
Basically,
In the event of, here we are set up with our temporary disaster shelter, and this is pertinent this year because it actually hits one of our disaster topics that we're doing at training, is the emergency evacuation of a pet shelter. And so one of the things that in our disaster-focused topic as far as the weather-related topic is going to be wildfires and also thunderstorms. So basically safety about those types of pieces that may affect us on a disaster shelter. But I can tell you that there has been a couple of times where NOAA's Wish has set up a shelter, and in the middle of the disaster shelter response, we've had to pick up and move because we were in harm's way, because maybe the wildfires and the winds have shifted, mm-hmm. and now we're, you know, in the firing range. And again, we're working with emergency management that is, you know, dictating to us where it is appropriate to be able to set up a shelter. And also, this is why it's so important to be on the inside of that ICS structure,
right.
is that we're all networking and working together to safely do our jobs in the disaster field.
Right. I mean, first responders are it's part of their protocol is to look at,
right.
you know, there's life and safety of the human beings, but then also they're looking for household pets. And it's funny because it kind of ties into officially with the ACP, with my my good buddy Andy Weitzberg, the president of the ACP in Long Island. You know, a shelter is more or less kind of a business. No, it's nonprofit. I understand that. But a shelter that boards animals having a disaster plan, and that's what Andy and I are always stressing on the program about businesses having a disaster plan, not just for their computers and such, but for their human assets. But also now we have, this kind of ties into the personal end of it. Obviously, it's people with family pets, but
right.
there's also, you know, the big box store has to have, you know, Petco has got to have a disaster plan.
Everybody has to have a plan.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, you would think everybody has a plan.
Well,
it's fun,
and
you know?
This is a great piece. I mean, if that's looking at it at the national level, let's bring it personal, mm-hmm. because really when we're talking disaster response, personal responsibility starts at home.
Sure.
Taking care of yourself and your family is your number one priority. So here it is, taking care of yourself, your family, and your pets are now your responsibility. But if we were to take this and turn it personally, anybody at any time can be impacted by a house fire. And we talk about, you know, even when they're teaching children in grade school about, you know, fire drills and house fire drills, and you should practice this with your family. Okay, now practice it with your family, including your pets, and trying to get everybody outside to a safe a location in the middle of a heightened kind of a, it's a little bit of a panicking situation, and
mm-hmm,
you're trying
sure.
to do it without the panic. But again, now include your pets, because your pets don't understand why you're running around. I mean, I had it happen to me with a carbon monoxide alarm going off in my house one time, and I'm kicking the pets off, and I'm hardwired into, you know, my fire department, and windows and doors are flying open, and, you know, within 3 minutes I'm getting removed from the household, because, you know, they need to come in and to mitigate the effects and to respond.
Right.
But in that 3 minutes time, I couldn't get everybody out. And so, again, so practicing your plan before it happens is crucial, you know, and key for your success.
Yeah. We have a good mutual friend, Shelley Lee Johnson. She just wants to question about how can we donate money to Noah's Wish. One way is to go to my website, drhradio.net, and because we put up the link, click it on there. But give us your thoughts on that.
Definitely in this economy, you know, getting
it's
donations
tough.
Are
tough,
difficult.
Right?
A lot of people may donate during an actual disaster response, and that money is restricted to be utilized for that response effort only. But again, doing the type of work that we do on a day-to-day, We rely on general donations, and so if you do go to the website, we do have, you know, a place where you can donate for general support via PayPal or, you know, checks, donations like that. Wills and bequests, a memorial made in your pet's name or a family member's name because they were, you know, an animal person that just loved animals. You know, these are all great ways. And or become part of our team and take the training and learn more ways to help. It's not just monetary financial support. We need, you know, boots on the ground. We need people that are willing to come out and help us during a disaster response and also spread the word.
Let's go to commercial break, and we'll touch a little more on that and another follow-up question with Shelley. Be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. ServiceMaster Restoration by CPP, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
At 23, Lance Gieselman's back was broken, leaving him paralyzed from the waist down and his left leg amputated.
I enlisted in the United States Army, went to Iraq 2003.
Lance's tank was completely destroyed when it was hit by an improvised explosive device.
I was an only survivor.
Paralyzed Veterans of America is an independent organization dedicated to ensuring our injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned and need. Paralyzed Veterans Senior National Service Officer Anthony Steele.
I'm willing to do whatever it takes to serve our veterans.
The PVA, from the very beginning of my injury, has always been there for me. If I was having problems with the VA, they were always there to step in.
Injured veterans like Lance will continue to need medical care and services for the rest of their lives, and paralyzed veterans will be there to help. If you would like to help our veterans, visit PVA.org, a public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Yep, there's the finger. And we're back. Disaster Recovery Hour every Tuesday. Dave's dancing. Anyway, go Giants. Joe, we got more questions. Joe, so another question from Shelley is how you guys funded. I think you answered that was kind of a part of your question also on how we're funded. But there, you know, interestingly, you know, I guess Katrina was that one of the larger responses for you guys?
It was. It was probably our defining moment from taking us, you know, from grassroots to more of a nationally recognized piece. Before we went into Katrina, we had sent in a strike team to help the tsunami in Sri Lanka and floods in Romania. And, you know, we were definitely struggling. And, again, you're hand-picking your team to go in for those types of responses. Katrina was eye-opening because we had to utilize Convergent volunteers, which are kind of trained on the job. People want to come in and help, but they haven't taken our two-day training. But on the other hand, the response was so great as far as what we needed to be able to accomplish with minimum resources, meaning our volunteers, that we needed extra help. And so from time to time, when we don't have enough trained volunteers, we will enlist, you know, convergent or spontaneous volunteers, but they have to kind of go in a just-in-time type of training and be supervised by a trained volunteer. But, you know, that was huge for us. And we had just under 2,000 animals set up in Slidell, Louisiana. And we had a MOU and a Memorandum of Understanding contract before Katrina, and had just done a training, a two-day volunteer training in Louisiana the year before. So talk about ironic twist of events that happened with that.
God was looking down, thanks.
Mm.
Regarding the website, I have a question that says, Sue Ellen, Shelley, thank you. Hopefully I'm giving you the proper kudos. Sue Ellen writes in, I see on your website you had training program in Mays Landing, New Jersey in 2011. Do you know of any upcoming programs in the New York, New Jersey 2012 area?
Yes. Great piece is that we are planning a two-day disaster response training in Long Island in Nassau County. We were fortunate to actually support them during Hurricane Irene, setting up a shelter for that. And so we are coming back. This will be our second two-day training that we've done in the Long Island area. We're also we've been brought in by PetSafe Coalition, another organization, to help spread the word, but we're coming back. So definitely if you look on our website in probably the next month, we will probably – there's 10 trainings that are coming through, and I'm just trying to lock locations and dates. So I think everybody's been a little bit taken back by, you know, some of the recent disasters and trying to play catch-up, but definitely Long Island is a definite for 2012, and it's probably going to be end of April, May, or July.
But you also have them throughout the country.
Correct, right. Correct. And I think on the East Coast, so we have Georgia, we have Maryland on the East Coast for this year.
Now, with funding, like I said, it's economic issues that we're experiencing in this country, and you know people don't have a whole lot of money to donate. So is like most NGOs, is it a struggle?
It absolutely is. You know, I'm not going to lie about that. Definitely, we utilize our training to help bring the awareness, but it also brings in some funds as well, and grants definitely help. But, you know, sadly, for our singular type of mission where we're actually responding to just disasters, in order for us to get more awareness and impact out there, we have to be responding to a disaster.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, I don't wish a disaster on anybody.
No, I agree.
But a disaster is good for our business, you know what I mean? So, you know, definitely there's other ways of, part of our other part of the mission is that education piece and getting people to step up and put a plan in place for themselves and then learn how they can help their community.
That's one of the struggles that the people in my industry have. I mean, we respond to the disasters and you want quality and you want certified individuals in those zones to assist, but yet... even though it's an NGO, non-government organization, you know, money is still the root of it. You need to, in order to do the right thing and do good, you need some shekels in your pocket.
Right.
And also, I mean, I'm private industry with the Service Master throughout this country. You know, we respond all over the place. It's a very fine line that we are towing because it's almost like capitalizing, but. So it's tough, but with animals, you know, there's flat out humanitarian feelings for this, if you will. I'm not properly saying it in the right manner, but you still also need to you still need funds. I mean, you need tents, you need shelters.
Exactly. I mean, Chris, we are not funded by the government or Homeland Security or anything like that. Sometimes, if there's an MOU in place, we may be eligible for reimbursement of some costs, like, say, vaccine or medical supplies, but it doesn't mean that everything is paid across the board. And the other thing is, if you look at our volunteers pay their own way
right.
to come and be there, whereas other major organizations that are out there, whether it be, like the Humane Society of the United States or ASPCA, they do give, you know, small stipends to their responders, or at least can pick up a lot of some of the smaller expenses, lodging, food, whatever, whereas we're just not set up. So when our volunteers come out to respond with us, they're paying their own way in that disaster response. We try to organize, you know, meals and or work within the ICS structure to help get lodging or something, but it's not going to be, you're not staying in a five-star hotel. You'll be lucky if we are staying in something that, you know, resembles a structured building sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's
But it takes to do what needs to be done, right, to help that community recover and those pets. That's what we're after.
Yeah, and that's the great passion of disaster response and people like Shelley was talking about it with CERT, and I mean these are all non-paying jobs and people stepping out of their ordinary lives to go help others. And I mean, I know we get in the United States, I know a lot of people like to bash us and all, but you know, we have a great format working here, and I know we have some bumps in the roads and issues, and again, the show's not about that. We're about preparedness and trying to help each other out here. And I think I was telling you yesterday when I did the Florida hurricanes, you know, that was 7 months away from my family. My wife's like, you know, you're not going to Katrina. It's just not happening. You know, so there's other people who fill in the holes. So it's got to be very challenging for you. I mean, the passion's there, you know, and you know what? Animals can't fend for themselves, you know.
Right.
So I think we squeeze in another one before the end of the show. Leanne, do you also provide pet food for people that are no longer in financial position to keep up with their needs of their pets? So I think we talked about it. Our community does have a shelter for pets when a disaster happens. I hope they will be that way in the future. So with that,
I can answer that in two ways. Usually a lot of the local food banks may have a connection with shelters and or a food company, and they can go in and get like Ziploc bags to help people that are struggling to feed their pets, mm-hmm. you know, dogs and cats. But that's not our focus in this piece. Our focus really is the disaster response. But during a disaster response, if people are themselves able to take care of their own pets, but infrastructure has been wiped out, the grocery store, there's not any water, there's no power, whatever, we will set up a public liaison tent and give away free food, you know, like 20-pound bags of food or whatever, mm-hmm. including, you know, cat litter boxes and cat litter and pet beds and leashes and collars, you know, topical flea and tick medications, things like that, to help support those people taking care of their pets, you know, towels, whatever is needed, just a little bit extra, whatever we can do to make the recovery effort easier on them and their pets is what we are doing.
So a question from our good friend Shelley. It says, can you give her an example of how a volunteer might get called into service with Noah's Wish? For example, Hurricane Irene was coming, so you knew these things were happening. How do you let your volunteers know when and where they're needed?
Well, once we have our volunteers go through training, they're automatically on a call-out list for mm-hmm. mobilization. And so since we're nationwide, we're split up by region. So our volunteer coordinator will send out a mobilization alert email, and, you know, we will tell people where we're responding, and we will ask who's available, how long are you available, and when is as early as you can get there, you know, trying to find out. What we're trying to do is stage our volunteers getting ready to go in. Sometimes it's a hurry up and wait, and sometimes, you know, we get a bunch of people that are ready to go, and the circumstance of the disaster no longer needs us or warrants us to actually deploy, and we have a stand down. And sometimes it's all hands on deck. Sometimes it goes beyond that region, and we're asking the neighboring region then for volunteers or to put up the backup for the next wave. So if it's not going to be just a week or 2 weeks and it starts to go beyond that and we're utilizing as many volunteers as we can, we will start to open up the deployment further and further. And that happened with us with North Dakota. You know, that was a hard location to get people to be able to go into.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is, there's nothing different than what you're doing is what the OEM guys do, what CERT people do is, you know, something's coming down the pike, let's get it in order. I mean, there's obviously administrative end of it to support a boots on the ground, setting these things up, and all volunteer. Why people need to still pay their bills and their mortgages and stay in their homes and keep their families intact. I'm very happy that Shelley, a very good advisor and friend to the show, she's also an ACP member, that she introduced you and I. And then, you know, this is, again, I'm very fortunate, you know, with the show and in my life, I have some really great people that I'm surrounded by. And you are just another person in that list of, you know, something I don't know that I'm able to bring to light, that these are issues that are out there that need to be discussed and prepared for. It's just, you know, the preparedness is just never ends, you know, just never ends. And it comes in so many colors nowadays.
Right.
Joe, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. Check out the Facebook and there might be some questions for you this upcoming days.
Very good. And
just go and you respond to those questions. I think it was fantastic. And lots of activity on the comments page. Joe, we have the link. People can get any intel they want from Noah's Witch off of mine. I think we'll have the show up on podcast sometime this afternoon. People sign up for the podcast. It was a great topic, and I'm glad, because again, you know, it really hits. Animals can't fend for themselves, and they're part of the family, so we got to take care of it.
Chris, thank you for having me on your show today. I appreciate, you know, helping me bring forth this particular topic. It is very dear to my heart and to a lot of your listeners as well by the activity that's showing up. But, you know, we continue to all network together to benefit people in the recovery during a disaster. So thank you for your show and this opportunity.
My pleasure. And say hello to your two horses, your one dog, your two cats, your two lizards, and your guinea pig. Thanks, Jeff. All right. Be well. Be safe. That's it. Rock and roll right to the last minute of the program. As always, thank you for the comments page. Andy Weitzberg, thank you very much for the new partnership with ACP and the radio show. God bless our country. Let's bring home our troops. Crap is still happening in Iraq. It's nuts, but God bless, and we'll see you next week. Take care.